You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Jamie Spence.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Marcus Kenilt secured his maiden European Tour win with victory at the Betfred British Masters.
It's big. This is a very prestigious event and a nice little trophy to have, and to get it as my first win is special.
And we'll be joined by Marcus later in the show. The Swede overcame the British challenge of Bobby McIntyre, Matt Wallace and defending champion Eddie Pepperell.
Fair play to Marcus. He's been a good player for a while. I quite admire his swing, actually, so, good to see.
All the reaction to come from a thrilling final day at Hillside Golf Club. Plus, we'll look ahead to the next major of the year, the USPGA at Bethpage, New York. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm pleased to say I'm joined by former European Tour winner Jamie Spence. Jamie, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well, Dan.
Excellent.
How pleased are you that I'm here?
I'm very, very pleased. I've been listening to you on the airwaves from far-flung places in the world. You must be glad to be back.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm thrilled to be back.
Where have you been over the last month or two?
I've been to Malaysia, yeah. India,
China,
which is great. China, yeah.
China?
Three good courses, really good courses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Golf is played outside of the USA, everybody. Just to let you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it a part of the world that you like going to? Do you enjoy those places?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I love Hong Kong. Hong Kong's a great city. Kuala Lumpur as well. It's a super place to go to. But the golf courses you go and see and the different grasses and the different conditions these players have to adapt to, that's the impressive thing here. And there's some beautiful golf courses throughout the world.
I'll tell you what, I was impressed by the fans in China as well. They came out in their thousands and they seem to really get into
it. It's getting bigger and bigger out there. It's going to get it's become a really big sport out there.
Speaking of supporters and galleries and sizable ones, we had many at Hillside, and Matt Cooper, our golf journalist this week, very warm welcome to you. You were there over the course of the week at Hillside, and again, the fans were great. Sell out on the Saturday, I think, definitely. And there was, you know, tens of thousands on the other days. It looked very, very impressive. You enjoyed your week up there, I presume.
Yep, fantastic week. A little bit of a sort of mini open feel to it. It was a little bit tricky Thursday and Friday when it was very, very cold. But as soon as the sun came out, the atmosphere was fantastic. And I also got a little visit to the British Lawnmower Museum in Southport.
Hang on. Why did you go to the British Lawnmower Museum?
This is one of the great British tourist gems.
Have you ticked this off your bucket list? Have you?
Yes. I'm not even joking. This was definitely up there. This has got Joe Pasquale's Strimmer. It's got Hilda Ogden's Qualcast. It's one of the great. My favourite caption I've ever seen in a museum anywhere in the world said Charles Darwin owned a donkey-led lawnmower. And he was also famous for the theory of evolution.
Jamie, you having this? Have you ever been to the Lawnmower Museum? Did you know that one existed?
No, it doesn't surprise me. In the back of my mind, and I thought I've heard this sort of thing before on the radio, but yeah, mate, come on, Matt, you got to go and get a life, mate, or mow your lawn.
Yeah, or both. Could Hillside ever host an Open?
I don't think it could, actually. Superb vantage points. The dunes around the back nine especially are absolutely spectacular to be up and down, but it's actually very difficult to get between them. So there was a little bit of a bottleneck between the 16th green and the 17th hole. It caused a little bit of slow movement of the fans. But a smaller event, definitely. I can see it going back there.
I know you're a fan of Northwest of England generally, Jamie, and Northwest of England golf certainly. Fantastic venue, wasn't it?
My wife is from that part of the world.
Yeah, good.
Roebuck, so less of the slights here.
It's not a slight.
Listen,
it's a statement.
Southport, for me, the courses on that coast are probably the best in the UK, in my opinion. I think Birkdale's my number one golf course in the world. I think it's brilliant. I've never played Hillside, never had the opportunity. I'm going to go up and play it. But West Lancaster down the road is some golf course. You've got Formby, Southport and Ainsdale. It's just a run of brilliant, brilliant golf courses. So it is a golfing paradise. Just a shame the sun doesn't shine a bit more like it did yesterday, and it looked fantastic.
Tyrrell Hatton said, what was it, on the Thursday or the Friday, said Mr. Whippy's not going to be doing too much business. But it did change, didn't the weather over the day? Did you mention that?
Very, very quickly. I mean, it went from sort of four or five layers to just T-shirts because it was fantastic when it got warm. But that said, it was actually quite cold as well, even when the sun was out.
Marcus Kinnott was our winner, a first European Tour success. He claimed the title finishing on 16 under, followed by a three-way tie for second, Eddie Pepperell, defending champion Bobby McIntyre, and Matt Wallace all finishing on 15 under. Jamie, there was late drama. I think many believed and thought that Matt Wallace was going to win. Still had the par 5 17th to come. We saw Marcus Kinnott drop shots on 15 and 16. It looked like Matt was poised to claim success, but in the end it was Marcus that came up with some clutch shots over the final couple of holes.
Yeah, and it's never easy to win, whoever you are, especially with an 18th hole like that. And just because they're called par 5s, I think we expect them to birdie it every time, but when the pressure's on it, it's never that easy. What I liked about Kinnott is his reaction to having dropped those two shots, to come back like that and trust yourself and believe in yourself and go through it and hit the shots, make a couple of birdies. That's impressive. I think in golf, it's how you react. And for all these players, there's always a time in the week when you've got to hit a shot. You really have got to pull one out. And that's what he did, and others didn't. And that's the beauty of the game to me, to see guys under pressure and come out with these great shots and putts.
But it's about how you manage yourself, isn't it?
And, of course it is.
You know, and we know that they can all pull the shots out, but so often we see players get into that sort of nosedive of form down the stretch and they just fall off the leaderboard. But to respond the way he did by birdieing the final two.
I followed him a bit because he was in the Junior Ryder Cup team 2014 and I noticed him there. The following year, he was leading in the Nordea Masters and I was on course there and I think I followed him third round. And he was impressed. It's just odd. Some players just stand out. You just remember them, you know. There's something about their games and their demeanour. He's very mature for his age, and he's just been on an upward curve. He's not played well this season, but listen, he didn't put a foot wrong. Well, he hardly put a foot wrong yesterday.
I don't want to keep banging on about Matt Wallace here.
Go on. But, yes, you do.
But in a way, I just thought it was almost his to lose from...
He's won enough, hasn't he? Come on.
He has won enough. And I think that's why I thought that he was going to win again, because he's got a good record from off the front. He's got that steely determination. He got well clear on Saturday, made some mistakes on Saturday, still felt that he was the man to beat going into Sunday. We saw mistakes from other players. The players that were coming from off the pace, the likes of Eddie Pepperell, great final round, 66. But I never felt he was really close enough to win. Am I over-egging it by saying Matt lost this one or not?
I wonder a little bit if Matt Wallace plateaued a little bit. He was flying through 48 holes, didn't make a bogey. But just when he did make he dropped a shot, hit it in the water. Two holes later, hit a bloke on the head, made double bogey.
But before, this is on the Saturday.
Yes, good point. And it just seemed as if it had been coming a little bit. And I don't think he ever quite rediscovered the sort of birdie machine form that had gone before then. I think another thing to mention about Matt Wallace, everybody has got this notion that when he's had a sniff of a win, he gets it. And yet, if you look very closely, what tends to happen with him, he gets a sniff, doesn't convert the win, and very quickly comes back afterwards. He did that on the Alps Tour when he broke through. He did it on the Challenge Tour when he won the Open to Portugal, because he was leading in Kenya a few weeks before and didn't win. Aaron Rye went past him. When he won it in the Indian Open, he actually referenced the fact that not winning the Italian Open a few weeks before was a big factor. So he could be somebody to keep your eye on, because he'll have learned that lesson.
Did it turn into a bit of a match play situation? I'm reading this because these are the producer's notes. I hate the phrase match play situation because it isn't match play. But was it match play, Jamie?
It can come down to that, but you've got to take care of your own business, because you realise that each hole is birdable. But around a course like that, you knock it in the rough or on those sand dunes, as Matt was saying, you can take double in a heartbeat. So you just got to look after your own game. And if you're starting to worry about what the other guy's doing, that is not the success story you want.
You can't just play the opposition. You've got to play the course as well.
No, you can't. Matt Wallace played great golf, I think, for two and a half, three days. You're always going to get one day where, do you know what, you're just a bit flat, you're just this, that and the other. And it was a bit scrappy for him yesterday, but he still looked like the winner, I have to say. He's won so many events, Matt Wallace, hasn't he? I mean, he can't win them all, but he's turning into a force on the European Tour in a very quick time.
Of the other challenges, I mentioned Eddie Pepperell, and of course I tipped him last week, so I wanted him to win. It was almost a backdoor second, almost. Was he ever close enough to challenge? I mean, he was putting the pressure on, I guess.
Well, he'd sort of set a target that was beginning to look like it was going to be good enough for that playoff.
Because earlier on you thought he's definitely going to get past.
Yeah, although I watched a couple of holes in his midway through his final round. I was out on the course and there was something very sort of composed and just sort of stealth-like about his progress. I think he's a golfer that's really matured over the last sort of year. He's really grown into this notion of he's a top-grade player on the European Tour.
What about the other challenges, Jamie? Bobby McIntyre with that double on the second, a seven on the par five. I mean, he's only one shot off the pace in the end. He finished fantastically, went eagle birdie. I guess one from off the radar, a player that I don't know too much about.
Well, he's just come off the Challenge Tour from last year's. Quite a few of the Scots. There's sort of a resurgent in Scottish golf, really, through David Law. He won early in Perth, I believe.
Victorian Open.
Thank you very much. I knew it was down there somewhere. They're close, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all the
Perth,
same.
Perth, Scotland, Perth, Australia, you know, Victoria. Anyway, it's close. Yeah, he's got a good swing. He has got a good swing. And once again, he's a player who I've been out on tour and watched and thought, he hits it good. Yeah, you watch a guy hit a few shots, you think, well, he hits it nice. And it's all logged in the back of your memory bank. So again, as he said, that was the first time he's really been in the thick of it, and he loved it, and he responded really well. That's going to give him a lot of confidence.
There was a great little story I heard regarding him. He made the eagle on 17. They go and perch high up on the tee at 18. He smashed his drive down the middle, and apparently Tommy Fleetwood's caddy, Finno, actually said to him as they went up to the boys, if ever there was a perfect pin for you to hit a nice shaped shot into the pin, this is the one. And that's fascinating.
He says that on every shot, Finno.
Ah, OK. Yeah. But
that's come on, don't spoil the story, Jamie. Come on, we're getting insight from the course here.
But that
typical Spence.
Yes, because that was quite interesting to me, the very notion that sort of thing went on. Jamie would know much more about that, though.
We saw quite a few. I mean, there was some taped caddy player conversations, one or two that the European Tour put on their Twitter feed. Saw one from Ross Fisher, who's American caddy is. I can't remember his name.
He got a new caddy. Yeah. And I can't. I don't know his name.
No.
He was been with Woody for so long. I just thought they were a fixture.
But I always thought that there was a lot of sort of mechanics and discussion with an awful lot of numbers and these calculations and permutations with clubs and yardages. And
smoke and mirrors, Dan.
Well, it was, because Ross's caddy just went, yeah, I think it's me gut that it's whatever it was. And that was what it came down to. It turned out to be right. But, I mean, these days, maybe it's just one or two high-profile examples, but it tends to be sort of almost friends on bags rather than proper caddies. Listen, Is that true?
A bit more than that. The player should know what he's doing. The caddy gives you the number, and the caddy's responsible for the kit, which is extensive these days. You need to know, you need to trust your caddy. You've got everything with you, and you're looking for someone to chat to and give you those positive affirmations that you need. It might be something subtle. It might not sound much at the time, but you've got to get to know, the caddy's got to get to know his player and know how he responds. There's no point having to go at him when that's not going to work for you. So it's just the odd word here or there. Now, if the player's really in a quandary about what to hit, that's when the caddy's got to come in. But he doesn't know how the player's feeling. He doesn't know really what shot he's trying to hit. So the responsibility is on the player, and the caddy helps.
You mentioned Tommy Fleetwood's caddy. What about Tommy's play over the course of the week? Because he was in the mix. He bogeyed the first hole of the final day, but he was obviously one of the favourites. People always say to me, well, he's the host of the event and he's got all these duties off the course, so he's not going to win this week because it takes so much out of him because he's got so many handshakes around with sponsors. I'm never quite sure if it's true, because he probably's got to do that every single week anyway if he's one of the star names.
I think he probably had quite a lot more on his plate this week. He was doing a lot of social because he went out and helped put repair divots at one point after 54 holes. I don't suppose that's something he has to spend a lot of time doing most weeks.
PR stunt, let's be honest, man. I don't think he's out there with a bucket for more than about 5 minutes, Tommy.
Yes, but
he'd be a good divot. I mean, he'd be one of the best divot repairers, I've got to say, because he's you know, attention to detail, but...
But the very fact that he has to go and waste sort of 20, 25 minutes.
I agree.
Doing
he's
that.
Got no chance. I don't care what Roebuck, he ain't got a clue, has he? No. He's got no chance last week with everything he had to do, Dan. No chance.
In addition to which, he
did finish eighth.
Yeah, well, he picked up a bit of a virus from his little boy as well. So he was feeling a little bit.
I'm surprised he did as well as he did.
Yeah.
Be interesting to note where the players who host these events, where they finished.
They've not had good records, have they? We were speaking about this last week. I don't think they've got good records at all, in fact.
I think Westwood flattered a little bit at close house, but a little bit,
which
like
is where it goes to.
Justin only just made the cut last year.
That's right. And I think Luke Donald, when he hosted, didn't do particularly well. But
so you're right, it has no bearing at all.
I don't know. It's a small sample size, isn't it? You know, it could change over the years. Who knows? Social media reaction for you. Jamie, are you on Twitter?
No.
I thought you were.
No, I was thinking about it. But
yeah,
I just
keep thinking
I just
about
get
it.
Hammered and annoyed.
Same as usual.
Tommy Fleetwood said, "Congratulations, Marcus, on a brilliant finish. I'm sure that's the first of many wins for such a talented golfer. Got to say, I'm overwhelmed by the whole experience of hosting the Betfred British Masters and how much love the Northwest and UK fans have given us. You are amazing." Matt Wallace says, "Game of inches. Great playing, Marcus Kinnault. Thank you, Tommy Fleetwood, for a great week. The support I had was incredible. Cheers all." And Stephen Gallagher said, "Well done, Tommy Fleetwood. You hosted a fantastic British Masters on your home turf. You're a credit to the game of golf and the European Tour." Always going to be difficult, I thought, because of where it is in the calendar, Matt, ahead of the PGA. I think Tommy's done well to host it, to play in it, to get one or two star names also. I think we can say it was a successful round, wasn't it?
I think so. I think you're correct about the position, and that's not going to change next year because it's going to be up against the Olympics, I believe, next year. So that's going to represent... But I mean, that's going to be a limited number of people who are going to be playing in that, so there's every chance you can get a half-decent field again. But the atmosphere around the town was very good. I think it's added to this notion that Tommy's not just like a golf hero, but he's a bit of a folk hero, I think.
Well, I'm pleased to say that we can now hear from the winner of the 2019 Betfred British Masters, Marcus Kinnault. Marcus, congratulations. What were celebrations like last night?
It wasn't that bad. It was a long night, but not any alcohol or anything, to be honest. It was just traveling, trying to get home as quick as possible. And I think I got home at 2 a.m. or just after 2 a.m. here in Sweden. So, yeah, it was a long night, but felt great.
Marcus, it's Matt here. Big question coming off the victory and a little bit of a left-field one. Your surname, we all want to know, is it Kinnault or Shinholt?
I like to go with Kinnault. Either is fine, to be honest, but Kinnault is the preferred one. We'll go with Kinnault.
Yeah, I think we should. Let's go with Kinnault. It's far easier for us Brits as well, Marcus. Now, where did this form come from? You've only made two cuts so far this year coming into this event. Must be a Lynx golf thing, eh?
I don't know. This game is so weird, isn't it? Yeah, it's been a struggle the whole year until Thursday, 4 days ago, really. Even during the practice round, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I didn't feel that good. But then it clicked on Thursday and, I don't know, kept the momentum throughout the week. And I was surprised, to be honest, it happened this week. I wasn't expecting that.
What clicked? Come on, give us a secret.
Well, Thursday it was the putting. I hit the ball okay, I guess. It was just, I had, I think, 23 putts, and I probably gained 4 shots just on the green on Thursday. And that released some of that tension I've built up the last couple of months, I guess. And just kept going and started to hit the ball better and better, I think, during the weekend. I was quite happy with how I hit the ball, finally.
Early on in the week, Marcus, you said that the course made you feel comfortable quite quickly. Is that because it was reminiscent a little bit of Lytham up the road, where you won the Lytham Trophy by 8 shots?
Yeah, I guess it's quite similar. The weather obviously is not ideal. It was quite cold and windy the first 2 days. The weekend was alright. It was still cold, but I don't know. It could be the grass type or whatever. I think it suits my eye. That's probably the thing. I like to play around those pop bunkers. I like to think my way around this type of golf course.
And you're saying it fits your eye. I was there last week. The grassy hillocks around the greens, especially on the back nine, that was visually a little bit similar to Le Golf National, where you led after 54 holes last year. So does that add to the notion that it really did fit your eye?
That's right. I haven't thought about it till now, but yeah, you're right.
Just speaking about that French Open last year, obviously it didn't go to plan in the last round, a 76. Did you draw upon that experience, though, because that was the first time that you're really banging contention on the European Tour? Did you think, well, I've been in this situation before. Did you do anything differently? Did you manage yourself mentally any differently this time around?
I felt the same things inside of me, but I think I just tried less this time, in a way, which sounds weird maybe, but that was how I tried to approach it. Don't be too hard on myself, just try to stay positive, whatever happened. And, well, I wanted to win, of course, but it wasn't like I was trying my hardest. I just tried to release some of that control and let it go. That was the approach I had over the weekend, and it worked out.
Marcus, obviously up against a lot of British players, they had an awful lot of the support from the galleries. Did that help or hinder you? Did you get in your own bubble, your own lane, or did you feel the pressure because maybe the crowd were pulling for other players? How did that pan out for you?
To be honest, I never felt that. I felt like the crowd was just as much on my side, really. It was a tough challenge, especially to play with Matt on the last day, and he played well. He could have been easily 4 or 5 under, but that was, I think, more pressure just playing against him, and probably to play in England, play the British Masters, was made it even more, I don't know, special for him maybe. And I felt like the underdog going into Sunday, which I guess wasn't a bad thing for me. But crowds were great.
Talk me through that second shot into the last green. It's got to be one of the best shots you've hit. You've obviously hit a lot of good shots in your time already, but it was a very impressive shot under the circumstances. What were you feeling just before you got over the ball?
When we came up to the ball, Adam, my caddy, he did the Irish for me, and he told me it was 177 meters, sorry, so 190-something meters. And when he said that, I just felt 7-iron. I felt 7-iron all the time. Looking at the shot, it looked like a 7-iron. I knew I was pumped up, and normally I hit my 7-iron 155. It was a bit downwind, so I knew it was going to go probably 165 or 170. Yeah, it just came out really nice.
Marcus, we chatted at the Turkish Airlines Open at the end of last year, reflecting on your first time you'd retained your card. And I asked about your goals for this year. And one of them you said was to be hitting your irons closer than you had been last year. It's almost like you were putting that into practice on the 18th. Has that been something you've been trying all year and it just finally came good?
I've been trying all my life. I wanted it for so long, and I'm just glad I took advantage this time. And I'm a bit surprised, to be honest. It all happened so fast, and I was behind going into 17, and Matt looked like he was running away with it. But, well, I took my chance, and I won it, but I didn't expect it.
And just finally, Marcus, before we let you go, where can we see you next? Has your schedule altered at all? What are you going to do now for the next few weeks going into the summer?
I was just on the phone with my manager before I called you guys. I would stick to the plan, which is to play in Denmark next week, which is not far from home for me. So I'll drive there, actually, which is nice. And then I play Belgium. I heard the course there was really nice, and I wanted to play that event, different format, which is fun, I think. David, my manager, told me about some top 20 race survival for the Open, so I'm trying to play well. I always try to play well, but if I play well the coming tournament, I might have a chance at the Open. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, Marcus, we really enjoyed watching you play at Hillside. Congratulations on your win once again. Have a great rest of the season, and hopefully we'll speak again soon. Well done, pal.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well done.
Jamie, really good to hear from Marcus there. Seems a very level-headed young man, doesn't he?
Yes, he is. I think he's ahead of his age. He's only 22. I like the progression he's made in his career from being in that Junior Ryder Cup team to playing well as an amateur out on tour. And watching him out on tour, you can tell he's just got a touch of class about him. Where he's going to go from now, I can only see him going one way, and that's up and getting better and better and better.
I guess when you win those big amateur events, a player like Marcus comes into the equation almost straight away when he turns pro, and he's done pretty well, hasn't he, by and large?
He has, although his first season on the European Tour, he struggled a little bit. And I spoke to him at the end of the year when he graduated from the Challenge Tour, and sort of backing up what Jamie's saying about his maturity, he was very clear that he'd gone back, learned the sort of business of playing 4 rounds of golf, learned the business of travelling around the world. And he was like, this time I'm going to be a lot stronger, and he's done exactly that.
Some more reaction now from the top of the leaderboard and first up last year's winner and runner-up in 2019, Eddie Pepperell, who gave this assessment of his final round.
Very steady, really. I hit a couple of bad shots, and but other than that, it was very steady. It was the whole week. I think I only made 2 bogeys, actually, which for me is remarkable. So, yeah, it was quite nice.
I think a few people can be forgiven if they thought Matt and kind of Marcus were just going to run away with us and split from the field. Did you think right to the end of that back 9 that you might have had a chance?
Yeah, I kind of set myself a target of 17 around just after the turn, and I thought I expected those guys to get to 17. Obviously, what did they get to? 16 in the end, so not far off that. But, you know, the pins weren't that easy today, and obviously you got the pressure playing at the end there for those guys. So, you know, you can never be too sure. But, listen, fair play to Marcus. He's been a good player for a while. I quite admire his swing, actually. So, you know, good to see.
It's been a fantastic week. Great crowds, great weather eventually this weekend on a lovely course. Tommy also done a great job this week. Can you see yourself wearing his hat for a British Masters?
I don't know. I don't think that's up to me. Tommy, you know, is a wonderful role model. He's achieved a lot more in his career than I have as well, which is a big factor, I think, in terms of hosting. You need to have a pretty stellar career behind you. I'm not sure I've got that yet. But, you know, hey, listen, one day, of course, I'd love to. If at some point it's right, then yeah, absolutely.
He's going in the right direction, though, isn't he, Jamie, to potentially hosting a British Masters, second, having defending his crown last week. And, of course, he's played well in the States this year, third in the Players' Championship. His career is very much on an upward swing, isn't it, still?
Yeah, of course it is, yeah. But he don't want to be thinking about that. I think it's too early for Tommy, really. Tommy was saying that as well, but I think Tommy's just got that persona, the public love.
Yeah,
the public
love Eddie, Tommy. Hasn't he?
He has, yeah. Well, Eddie, through his Twitter account, yeah. He's done a brilliant job. I mean, he's engaging. He's very engaging, Eddie, and he's someone the public can relate to.
He talked about, you know, he's not got those wins on his CV like Tommy has. But if you're a character and, you almost jump out the golf pages.
Yeah, but there's plenty of character. There are quite a lot of characters out there. Doesn't mean they should host a British Masters. You've got to have a record. I think Eddie needs maybe a little bit more than that. And then he's going the right way. I mean, I mean, if you're talking about his golf game, which I'd like to, he hits that three wood a lot, which just tells me I'd like to see him hit the driver a bit more. But that's about the only criticism, because he thinks very well on the golf course, doesn't get flustered.
Yeah, he averaged 257 yards off the tee last week.
See?
That three wood is quite interesting. A couple of years ago, I was chatting to the guys from 15th Club, the stats guys who were behind the Ryder Cup team the last couple of years, and Jamie likes that. And
Jamie's mad into analytics, so take your time with this point.
Get this, though. They said to me he fits very similarly to Henrik Stenson. And
what, because he hits a three wood as well? That doesn't take a genius to work that out, does it?
This is what analytics come up with, Jamie.
Common sense, I'd have thought.
Any further points on analytics?
No, but when he won at Doha, that had been in my brain.
I love all the strokes gain stuff. I think it's crucial and key. Jamie, your thoughts? Emperor's new clothes or the new thing that we should all be looking at? This is a podcast, Jamie. You have to speak.
I'm guessing that Jamie's thinking something similar to...
It's just so obvious. It's so obvious, all these stuff. It's like we've never analysed our games before. All the rest of the people before this magical stuff come out, we never analysed our games. Of course you did. And it's just a different way of putting it out there. And guys like you love strokes gained.
Yeah.
Guys like me don't understand what that means.
Fair enough.
I don't know what you're judging it against and who you're judging it against. Because different people have different skill sets and different... you've got you going now, haven't I? No, it drives me mad. But listen, punters love it. I don't.
Matt, any further thoughts on strokes? I love this conversation. I have it with Robert Lee all the time. He takes a similar stance to Jamie Spence.
I like stats.
You can admit it if you like it. Come on.
No. I like it. However, I do think it's a little bit like when somebody like me has to write a story, right? I spend all the time telling the story, and the person who lives it, in my case, a lot of the time, the golfers, they don't actually notice that there's a good story going on because they're actually getting on and doing it. And it's me that puts two and two together and makes five normally when I should be. But the point is that we are the people who watch, other people are the people who actually do. And I think there's a little element to that when ex-pros get a bit frustrated.
Absolutely. Ex-pros frustrated.
Marcus Kinnock said he had his strokes gain was 4 point something. Yeah, 23 putts. Mm. Yeah, you putted well. Yeah, 23 putts. That's what you got to look at. Now, stop shaking your head, Robert.
Well, no, I've just been told to move on by the producer of the podcast. Another who ended tied second and just one shot behind Marcus Kinnock was Scotland's Bobby McIntyre.
My caddy Greg said to me, walking off, just be patient. There's loads of birdies out here the way I'm playing. And I just, really, this week is probably the best I've hit my irons. I mean, I couldn't have hit them much better this week. And I struggled a wee bit off the tee, but 15 under par in a second place. Everyone would have taken that at the start of the week.
Certainly. I think people could have been forgiven for thinking this was just going to be between Matt and Marcus at times. Did you ever feel like I just need to see what comes out of me?
I personally thought if they play the way they want to play, they'll run away with it. But I just had to hang in and do what I'd done. And I didn't think I'd leave it that late. Really, the way I was playing, I thought, right, I'll get out there front nine, I'll get a couple under. But the wind in the back nine suited me down to the tee, so I just had to stick in and go for it.
It's been a great week and great British Masters week. Incredible fans, the weather's come out, and of course you've got the golf course on top. Is this the kind of weeks that you dream of coming from the Challenge Tour?
Oh, for sure. I mean, playing with Tommy Fleetwood today, I stood on 16th tee and I'm looking at the background going, whoa, this is what it's all about. And I mean, the fans were brilliant out here and Tommy was great as well. And yeah, just a great week.
How much experience do you think Bobby McIntyre will get from performing well at a high-profile event like this? A lot of TV coverage, some big names there as well, because you'd come off the Challenge Tour, as you mentioned, Jamie. And do you get more belief when suddenly you're mixing it with the big boys?
Yeah, of course you do. And also, I always think when you come off the Challenge Tour, you're going to get two or three weeks where your game clicks and you're going to feel good about yourself like you did this week, but you've got to make it count. It'd been so easy for him yesterday. He shot 68 yesterday. Let's say he shot 71, did okay. Well, that's a huge difference in Race to Dubai points, but he didn't do that. He stuck in there, hit some shots at the end, and he won a really big check, the biggest check of his career. And he's gone a massive step to keeping his, he will keep his European Tour card now. So huge week for Bobby McIntyre, who comes from Oban in Scotland, right up there in the northwest, beautiful part of the world.
Want to watch this season, next season, forthcoming seasons? What do we think?
I think it was his fourth top 20 of the year. He was sort of ticking along quite nice. I think he got six cuts from nine starts ahead of last week. And I agree with Jamie, it's so important when you've got a sniff to make the most of that chance. I think it might have been Tommy Fleetwood's mum I spoke to about 4 years ago, and she was saying how important those little chances that you get are vital to make the most of every season, because players just don't peak that often, especially early on. Once you get really good, you can stay riding the wave, but early on you don't get that many chances.
Any other takeaways? I know Jamie likes that phrase. Any other hot takes from the British Masters?
Do you mean any other players who caught my eye and played some good golf?
Maybe, or just the course or the event in general?
As I said, I love that stretch of coast for golf. Go and play it. Mm. Paul Waring. I like Paul Waring as a player. He's a local fellow in Merseyside. I'm really pleased with him. He's had a good week. Martin Keimer's on his way back. Some mates of my golf club down in Kent drove all the way up to Southport to watch the golf on Saturday. That's quite a trip, isn't it?
Yeah,
it just shows how people love the game in the UK. They're prepared to drive to watch these great players. But they were really impressed with Keimer. And I can see signs of Keimer playing a lot better. So they're my little takeouts.
I was quite impressed with Richie Ramsey, fifth on his own. Not that surprising in the sense that he plays links golf very well, but he's coming back into a little bit of form. He said something quite interesting at the start of the week. He was telling the Scottish journalists that he's ready to quit at 40 if he feels he's done enough. And he hasn't got long now. It's two or three
years. How old is he?
I think he got two or three years.
Crikey.
The other thing I'll take away from that is that...
Did you see where he waited to take his shot because of a family of ducks?
No.
I read it, but I didn't see it.
You read it, okay.
He was
very patient as a family of ducks made their way past him. Good on
him. Should always look after wildlife.
Absolutely, that's what I'm suggesting.
And the environment.
100%. Sorry, Matt, we were interrupting.
The other thing I was going to say is that the town was buzzing with lots of footballers last week, and I noticed that one-time European Tour podcast panelist Paul Eales.
He was
sat in the same seat as Kenny Dalglish in a bistro one night. So for Friday night, Kenny Dalglish was in there.
What, he was on his lap?
No. The next day...
Who was on whose lap?
The next day, Eales, he was sat in King Kenny's throne.
Fantastic.
In the window of the bistro in Birkdale Village.
Richie Ramsey's 36, incidentally.
In June.
So he's got four and a bit years.
He will never, ever pack up at 40. What's he going to do? He's a smart lad. Richie, maybe he will, but it's a hard thing to give up playing pro golf when you're right in there.
A word on Matthew Jordan, 63, first day was an invite, wasn't he? Brilliant, obviously, on that first day.
And another winner of the Lytham Trophy, but also plays out of Royal Liverpool, so he had plenty of experience of playing that little stretch of links land.
Yeah, great week for him.
Next year, of course, Lee Westwood once again, close house once again, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I will be looking forward to that. Is it the same time of year up there?
No, it's going to change, isn't it?
Thank goodness for that. It might get to about 10 or 12.
We need the top 10 from the Betfred British Masters. Jamie, you've got the details for
ready
us.
And waiting.
Go on, son.
Ready and waiting, Dan. In a tied for eighth place, seven players. Oliver Wilson, he was one of them. Renato Paratori, good singer, Renato. Joost Luiten, Nicholas Lemke from Sweden. Pablo Larrazabal, Martin Keimer, and the host, Tommy Fleetwood. Tied sixth, Jordan Smith and Paul Waring, two terrific young English players. Richie Ramsey, as we talked about, he was fifth. Tied second, Bobby McIntyre, Eddie Pepperell, Matt Wallace, and our winner from Sweden, the young Marcus Kinnelt.
Last week's predictions, and a reminder, last week we had two picks, one outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race to Dubai standings. Usual points scoring system, 20 for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. Now, Jamie, next time you see Rob Lee, just tell him about my scoring here, because week after week when I'm not here, which is most of the time, he absolutely gives me grief for my selections.
Quite rightly, too.
Well,
quite
hang rightly. On. Now, come on. Eddie Pepperell, second, gets me 10 points. Paul Waring.
Did you come up with these?
Listen, it says my name and then these selections. So somehow I've managed to pull them out of the bag. Paul Waring, who was tied six, got off to, I think he only just made the cut on the number, I think. Tied six gets me 5 points, so 15 points for me. Richard Boxall Esquire went for Joost Louten, who was tied eighth, gets 5 points. And Adrian Otegi, do you know why he went for Adrian Otegi?
Is it because his caddy's based in the northwest?
No, it's because he sat next to him on the plane.
Yeah, that
coming back from Morocco. That's the sort of research that Boxy does.
Boxy couldn't tip a wheelbarrow.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, that we were astonished that he even admitted to it, but that was his reasoning. And Ben Colley went for Tom Lewis, who was tied 53rd, and Mike Lorenzo Vera, who didn't play, was down two and then didn't in the end. So presenters on 155, co-presenters 60, guests on 20. Guests are having an absolute shocker. Presenters aren't, which is mainly me. That 155, 80% of that score is me. Tell that to Rob. I'm sure he listens anyway. I know he downloads the podcast every week. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. In the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game, Alan Fenwick and his team, Chalfont Golfers, top the table, 13,441 points, while Anders Mannell took the weekly title with a team that contained Tommy Fleetwood, Matt Wallace, Eddie Pepperell, and crucially, Marcus Kinnelt. If you want to get involved, you can do. Head to europeantour.com and register your team. Top 10 in the race to Dubai. Jamie's standing by again.
Well, at 18th is Marcus Kinnelt. Thought I'd better give him a mention. So he's into the top 20. 10th place is Francesco Molinari. Hao Tong Lee is in 9th. Matt Wallace, 8th. David Lipsky, 7th. Louis Oosthuizen is 6th. Ian Poulter is 5th. Justin Harding, impressive South African, having a great season at 4th. Shane Lowry at 3rd. Jorge Campillo, he's just a money machine, Jorge. He's at 2nd. And Kevin Kisner is our number 1.
On the Challenge Tour, Antoine Rosner became the first back-to-back winner for 7 years as he raced to a 7-stroke victory at the Prague Golf Challenge. The Frenchman posted a closing 4-under par 68 at Prague City Golf as he reached 17-under par and duly added the Prague Golf Challenge title to his Challenge d'Espagne crown, which he claimed at the Iski Golf Aturi last week. Moving on to the PGA Tour, South Korea's Sung Kang claimed his first PGA Tour victory at the AT&T Byron Nelson in Dallas. Kang, who equaled the course record of 61 in his second round, had to complete 27 holes on the last day owing to weather delays. He finished on 23 under, while runner-up Scott Piercy of the United States ended the tournament without making a bogey. A word on Sung Kang. Matt, he wobbled on the odd occasion over the course of the week, but eventually got the job done, and I guess overall was pretty impressive.
I think he was very impressive. And an interesting little snippet about him is that he gets into the PGA Championship off the back of that victory, and he actually holds the course record at Bethpage Black. He shot a 64 there in 2016 in round 4. Yeah, so he's gone from one course record to another.
Does that mean we should back him maybe for this week?
No. he won't be on my shortlist.
Last week, it was announced that Europe captain Porrig Harrington will choose 3 wild cards for next year's Ryder Cup instead of 4. 9 players will qualify automatically with points earned in tournaments from the BMW PGA Championship in September until the same event the following year in 2020. The remaining 3 will be picked by Porrig. Jamie, you're heavily involved in all things Ryder Cup. Good decision, bad decision? Completely up to the captain. You respect that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, each captain has his own views. I think the more people qualify, the more you hand it out to the members, say, look, make the team. Personally, I think that's better, but I also understand that, you know, it depends how many people are playing in America, around the world, and maybe aren't going to play in so many qualifying events, but although the world points list now sort of compensate for all that. But listen, however many picks you have, you're going to have to leave someone out, whatever it is. And that's going to always be, it's always going to come down to 2 or 3 players. I think when Montgomery was captain in 2010, he had a really tough pick, because he had Donald, Casey and Rose not in the team, and Harrington, and then Eduardo Molinari came through and won 3 events. So that was really difficult. So that could happen. But it doesn't make it any easier for you. You'd rather be people qualified and take it out of your hands.
I like the fact that you've got to qualify for it. I think it,
focus. It's always going to be someone's going to miss, yeah. Unfortunately, because there's so many good players now.
I've heard quite a few sort of Americans suggest, was it Tiger Woods or one high-pro player suggested that they all should be picks, from an American point of view and not have any sort of qualifying criteria. And I can't remember who that was, but at least more than they've got at the moment.
I do think that Padraig Harrington might have said in Turkey last year that he was under the impression that players that earn their spot perform better.
Well, he would have got the stats for that, I would have thought.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a sense that it might have been a little bit anecdotal as well, but his theory was that if you work your way onto the team, you're not trying to prove anything to anybody, and therefore you succeed better in the
team.
That's
a fair point, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think if you qualify, you've got a right to be there. It doesn't mean the captain's going to pick you to play.
Let's get the world top 10, the world's top 10, shall we? Jamie.
10th spot is Ricky Fowler. 9th is Xander Schauffele. Number 8 is the scientist, Bryson DeChambeau. Number 7, Francesco Molinari. Tiger is number 6. Justin Thomas is number 5. Rory, number 4. Brooks Koepka, 3. Justin Rose, 2. And just ahead of him, our world number 1, Dustin Johnson.
Time to look ahead to the next tournament on the European Tour. And it is a big one, of course. It is the USPGA Championship at Bethpage in New York. Brooks Koepka is the defending champion. And this is the first time in 70 years that the tournament will be played in May. Matt, your thoughts on the calendar change, first of all. Good, bad, don't care?
I think it's good because I have never been a massive fan of the PGA. I'm a little bit majored out. Come August, it's not just fourth in ranking of the majors, it's fourth on the calendar, and it's still the fourth most prestigious, but being tossed in here, I'm more interested in what's happening. And an element of that is the fact that Tiger Woods did so well at Augusta, and that the notion of major championship is big in our head. But I think it's profoundly good for the tournament. It's had profound effects on the schedule, I think, and that's impacted pretty harshly on Europe. But in terms of the tournament itself, there's no need for that. What was the catchphrase they used?
Glory's last shot.
Glory's last shot, which we can consign
that one to the dustbin.
It was a pretty desperate attempt to validate the tournament, and I think actually this has made a much better job of it.
Well, why was it moved? Was it because of the emergence of the FedEx Series? Was it the Olympics? Why was it moved? Do we know?
Yeah, to get the FedEx finished by the end of August before the start of the NFL.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's got nothing to do with actually golf.
Golf, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not as if other sports don't move things. I mean, no one would move the Football World Cup, for example.
No,
they haven't. Hang on. What do you make of this schedule change? I mean, Matt mentioned that it snookered our event at Wentworth and we've had to move that. Would you have kept it where it was, Jamie?
I would have kept it where it was. It just keeps a big event in America every 3 weeks or so. Couple that in with the WGCs and move the players back to March, which sits better. So from their point of view, over the other side of the pond, where everything happens in golf throughout the world, obviously, it helps them. It doesn't help. I don't think it really helps the rest of the world. I suppose once the NFL starts over there, there's nothing else that goes on commercially, especially in a sporting environment. So that I can understand the reasons why they moved it. Personally, the USPGA missed a trick. It's never been the best major. It used to be a club pro event. It used to be a match play event. So it's been trying to invent itself. They should have reinvented it by taking it around the world. It's as simple as that. They missed a big trick there. Instead, they've gone into bed with the PGA Tour. They should have taken it around the world. Imagine if you'd had the PGA Championship. They could have brought the world together with this tournament. They really could. They could have had the major down in Australia, Japan, wherever you want to take it. That's what they should have done with it. But money has overruled it.
Has that worked with WGC events? I mean,
they tried to take them around the world.
Well, they tried to take. Well, they did take
the match play to Australia. The HSBC is a great event.
Yeah,
it's a great event. The HSBC.
They tried to take the match play to Australia, didn't they? They took it there,
but none of their players went. You took the major there; they'll go
because it's a major.
Of course.
Do you see that happening in the future?
I think it's called foresight.
Is it 10 years definitely in May? I think that's the deal, isn't it?
Okay.
And then potentially they might look at it again. Would it depend on maybe the emergence of, say, China and players in that
depends
part
how much
of the world.
It depends how much money they make from this date.
So if they don't make enough, they might change it.
Maybe.
Mm. Give us your thoughts on the course. Everyone suggests it's very, very difficult. The fact that they're moving it and playing it in May, will that make any difference at all, Jamie?
What Matt? I do know is that it's been quite wet, which has made the fairways quite soft. and that there's rumours that the rough is not maybe as thick as it might have been in US Open when it was at 2002, 2009. Yep. It was very rough, and they've not narrowed the fairways as like Mike Davis of the USGA would. That said, so there's been four times this course has been used on the PGA Tour in the 21st century, 02 and 09 in the US Open, 2012 and 2016 for the Barclays. If you look at the scores, it's always been tougher, apparently, in the US Open, yet they played to a par of 70 for that and par 71 for the regular PGA Tour event. Actually, the scores that the players shot weren't that different. I don't think it'll be as tough as the US Open was, but those wet fairways might exaggerate the fact that it helps long players.
7,432 yards. Tiger won in 2002. Lucas Glover, that was the Monday finish in 2009. You mentioned Patrick Reed winning. Nick Watney has won as well. Patrick Reed, I think, has suggested that it tests every single aspect of your game. It's a quote that we see from a lot of players when they enter majors. I'm never quite sure if it's true. What do you know about Beth Page? How difficult is it going to be this week, do you think, Jamie?
I've not been there. I know its reputation. I know the crowd are going to be incredibly partisan and loud.
How much of a difference does that actually make? Is it significant in it?
I would have thought so, especially for certain European players. It's going to make a difference. They get behind their own man, but you need a certain temperament to cope with that, to enjoy that. I think you've got to drive the ball well, wet fairways especially. You're going to have to get the ball out there. It's going to be more like a normal Bethpage. If you went and played Bethpage, it's going to be a little bit more like that than it would be, as you say, US Open, when they narrow everything and make it a ridiculous test. So it should make for a good watch. The 17th, I think they make that into a stadium type par three as well, a long par three, about 210. That'll be a good watch, but you're going to have to play some good stuff. And when they say it tests every aspect of your game, of course it will. It's a major. Every major tests all your game. That's a great thing about this game. You can't be one-dimensional.
Winning score at Bethpage Black has never been lower than 274, and there is a sign that has been well photographed, and it says the Black course is an extremely difficult course, which we recommend only for highly skilled golfers.
So you're not ever playing there then?
Listen, I'd struggle at my local pitch and putt.
We should go and have a game. That'd be fun.
Let alone Bethpage.
It
is a public course, isn't it?
It is public. In all truth, though, I think if you've got good play, me included, I'm not sure you reach some of these fairways, to be honest with you. You've got some carries to get to the fairway. There's three par fours over 500 yards.
Talking of major championship courses coming up, I played Royal Portrush 10 days ago and can report that is looking pretty spectacular at the moment.
What did you score?
14 over.
Oh, that sounds good.
A bit of a ropey.
That sounds good.
Four over the back nine, so that wasn't too bad.
Very good.
That's good.
Jamie mentioned the stadium effect. 18 is looking pretty spectacular. They've got hoop stands around 18 like they did at Hoylake. And remember last year they had hospitality down the left-hand side of Carnoustie. It's moved up towards the stand and you hit on an angle. So there's a tiny look of TPC Scottsdale about the 18th.
Tiger Woods is obviously one of the favourites to win this week after his Masters success. There's going to be an awful lot of focus on him. He's going to have an awful lot of the fan support as well.
He's
not played since. Do we know why he's not played? Is it simply because
we're guessing, aren't we?
Schedule of it? Has he been injured? I think
he's managing his health and his body. Can only be that. When I saw him at the Ryder Cup after he won the FedEx last year, he could hardly walk. Mm-hmm. He looked like he'd just run five marathons.
So if it's cold conditions and we know he's got the back issues and it's in May rather than, you know, hotting up in the summer, is that going to be a factor?
Well, you have to ask him that, but three back fusions...
I'll get him on the phone a little bit later, yeah.
Listen, I just think he's going to have to manage his back as best as he can. And we know that when he gets his game to 7 out of 10, he can win.
Jamie's dead right. In Paris, he looked both physically and mentally exhausted. But that was a long summer. He played a lot of golf leading up to that Tour Championship and then into the Ryder Cup. So I'm with Jamie. I completely think he's managing his body and also probably his brain.
Is he going to win this week?
It's a bit of a shame because you want to see him out there again.
Absolutely,
I'd like to have seen him out between... No, I don't think he will. I think we react to... The reaction to his win is always going to... He's going to break Jack Nicklaus's record now and... But that was a great. That was the first time he's won from a high. It was a different win, wasn't it? That we've seen from Tiger.
First time major.
He's not going to be able to dominate these players, I don't think, in the way he used to.
Is he going
to
run out of time?
He can still win, though.
Is he going to run out of time? Literally, he's just going to. He's going to be too old to win these, and his back's going to seize up, and he's just not going to be able to play.
It's difficult to say. I think if he gets on the right course in tough conditions, I think he can hit that 2-iron a lot. I think he can win because he's just got such a great brain.
Dustin Johnson obviously one of the favourites as well. Played the Heritage last time out, course that didn't really suit him. Bit of a backdoor second at the Masters, but if we're looking for someone that can hit it long, obviously DJ comes into it.
Of course. Just the thing with him, though, is he's played a lot of majors and he's still just won one. For somebody who's been up and down at number one in the world, he doesn't seem to have quite found the trick of peaking in the majors.
I agree. I tipped him a lot. He tends to flatter to deceive at times. He's a great player, world number one, obviously, but...
He's got in front in majors, though.
Should have won more.
You know, it's. I mean, I mentioned that backdoor second. He's got in front and
he's been unlucky, hasn't he? Come on.
A couple of occasions.
He has been unlucky.
But most famously at Pebble Beach, possibly, when he had a strong lead going into the final round.
Yeah, that I think he was a different player then. That was the one that Graham McDowell wasn't talking about. I mean,
I think when he grounded his club in a bunker...
There, that was the one.
That was straight.
Well, he didn't know it was a bunker.
Who would know? You've got the crowd standing in a bunker with you and you're not allowed to... You know. So he's been unlucky, but you wouldn't put it past him winning.
Justin Thomas is a PGA winner.
Yeah, I would imagine he's got a great chance this week. And he's one who seems to be getting it. It seems a bit strange seeing as he's won the PGA Championship, but that his record at Augusta took a little bit of time getting used to the challenge there, and he's not done that well in the Open, but he's starting to get to grips with the majors, I think, and this could be a good one for him.
Jamie?
Oh, you can't rule him out where he hits the ball. He goes at it, though, doesn't he? He really does go at it. It's almost like you've got to be on it. When you hit it that hard, your time has got to be good. You've got to, really got to be on it. Otherwise, your misses are going to be quite severe. And I'm not sure on a course like this you want to miss it too far.
A lot of European focus, obviously, on Rory McIlroy. I think there is a suggestion that the venue at the Wells Fargo is correlated maybe with Bethpage.
Oh, OK. So Quail Hollow.
Yeah, Quail Hollow, sorry. And obviously he's got a great record there, maybe should have won this year, faltered obviously, having started really well. I mean, we always think that Rory's going to play well, and he generally does, but...
He will play well.
Yeah.
Oh, he will. Will he
win?
What's
going to be the question mark this week?
Probably on the greens, probably. He does still haven't really come to terms. I mean, the rest of his game, when he drives the ball really well, he makes the game look... He can just make it look so easy. The golf course that people are struggling on, he just makes it look ridiculously easy.
He seems to create a lot of chances for himself that he doesn't take.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a mental battle with him as well, more than a physical. I think he pushes when he shouldn't and defends, mate. You know, it's a difficult balance to have. When you miss two or three chances, it's easy to just get out of that right zone that you should be in when you're putting. And you can start to try and force it. And then you've got another tricky one coming back. So he just needs to remain calm on the greens.
A curious thing about Rory is he was 30 last week, or perhaps the week before, and it's now nearly 5 years since he won a major.
It's incredible,
isn't
it?
That's a big chunk. That's like what's that, 16, 17% of his life he's gone without a major, and yet he's got so many of them. Amazing.
Other Europeans, Francesco Molinari still seems to fly under the radar for some because you look at those big Americans, you look at Rory McIlroy, you talk about Justin Rose, which we will do in a second. Is he still going to be thinking about the Masters, do you think, Jamie? Because for my money, he should have won that event. How long does that linger in a golfer's mind at that level?
He's a strong character, but that will have hurt, because he didn't play well, did he, last day? He just didn't. It was very un-Molinari. And I think we're seeing a different Molinari. He seems to have stepped his game up a level. But maybe just doing that just puts a little bit more pressure on you, a bit more expectation. I don't know. He's putting a lot better. But yeah, that's got to hurt. Didn't he miss the cut the following week? It's not surprising, at Harbour Town. I think he did. So he'll have forgotten about it. But getting back in contention again, those thoughts will start to resurface.
Your thoughts on Francesco? He did miss the cut. You're right, Jamie, at Heritage.
I expect him to do well again this summer, but it's just a matter of time how quickly he can get. Because I think it will linger for some little while, but I think ultimately he'll get over it.
I'm rattling through one or two of the top names here. Give us some other names that you're not necessarily you're going to choose for your selections, but potentially have got a storyline this week in terms
Tony
of players Finau, that you think are going
to
play well. Yeah?
Tony Finau's got to come through at some point. Golf course that again should suit. Does he putt well enough? No, he doesn't.
He's only won once on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, because he doesn't putt well enough. It's simple, really. I mean, he seems to think he hits good putts when they miss by 6 inches. So Jason Day's bubbling as well. Possible.
He's got a good record, hasn't he, in the PGA generally.
Sergio played well at Quail Hollow. He was third this course in 2012, fourth back in 2002 in the US Open. So he's got a nice record. But, you know, we're talking about the loud New York crowd. If they're going to get boisterous about anybody,
they've got it Sergio before, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, they're going to be after him, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're all saying it affects him. I mean, you know, you've been...
He won't. I don't think he'll be too bothered, really. He really won't. He is,
but I mean, this season we've seen him have a tantrum or two, haven't we?
We have. I hope it's not there. I think the crowd will really bother him. It's his own game that will bother him. So, fingers crossed for Sergio.
Anyone else? Justin Rose, awful in the Masters, better more recently.
He's
a former US Open winner at a tough course, obviously. I know we're talking PGA here, but does it set up nicely at Bethpage for him?
A touch of an enigma for me. I mean, he's obviously a major champion and came back in great style at Carnoustie last year, but he had high expectations going into Augusta National and then was pretty disappointed at his own performance there. Did he miss the cut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is almost impossible to do.
Yes. And the fact that he was so sore about that could actually work as a really good motivator.
Change of clubs catching up with him a little bit. Did it almost like new club bounce? Is that a thing? I've just invented that. And then he's suddenly, you know, not playing as well.
I'd say it's very unusual that he missed the cut. He didn't perform at all, really, at Augusta. So, it is a little bit of an unknown with Justin at the moment.
Is it Ricky Fowler's time? I think there's a lot of trends that suggest Fowler might win.
How many times have we asked this question?
Well, I know. But, you know, first time winners of PGAs in, I think, the right age group, he's won this year. There's a lot of trends that suggest that's what you have to do. You've got to have a calendar year win. You have to be, I think, between 25 and 35. Yeah. You have to have performed well previously.
And he also led after 54 holes on this course in 2016 in the Barclays. So that's a positive in one respect. The other respect is that he fell back to finish tied seventh, I think.
What does he do really well, Ricky Fowler?
I don't know. I usually ask those questions.
Well, go on then. Ask me that question.
What does he do really well, Ricky Fowler?
I'm not sure, Dan.
I could have said that.
He doesn't... he's not the longest, is he? Although he gets it out there. He's a good iron player. His putting is, I would say, up and down. He can be brilliant, but then he can be really, really cold as well. In fact, the one start I think he led last year was out of the bunkers around the greens. His up and downs out of traps were brilliant, which tells me he misses a few greens. So... Has he got that power that Dustin Johnson has, or Brooks Koepka have, or that patience that Tiger has, and those holding those crucial parts of Tiger has? No, so I still think he's got some way to go, Ricky Fowler.
But if you can deal with Phoenix, you can deal with New York, can't you? I guess.
Yeah, he's a.
You're right
player.
About all his stats. I'm just looking at them now. They're all sort of, you know, middle to high sort of rankings around all of the major categories, but never top every week or never top 10 every week in putting or in driving or in driving distance. So it's
all up there somewhere, Dan. These stats you see.
You know, you love stats, really.
I love them, mate.
I can't tell you the strokes gained on Ricky.
It's just
but
an observation
I'll text you
of his game
later.
Rather than a stat, really.
Outside of the stats, here's one for Jamie. Does he just lack maybe a little bit of mongrel that's needed to be a winner?
He obviously does a great job off the golf course with everything he does. He's an exemplary professional for me. I always look for a little bit of X factor about a player, and I'm trying to think what it is about his game. I go, God, I'd love to look at the way Ricky does that. But he's just a very good player. But there's nothing that really stands out to me. And at the top echelons of the game, I'm talking about, put him against a normal tour, he's going to look like a world superstar. But against these other guys, it's tough to give up 30, 40 yards or someone who's putts the lights out.
Predictions. We've listed a lot of players there. We've got six all told, two apiece. And we haven't mentioned five of the six. So let's get a little bit of colour on these selections. Matt, I'll let you go first. Obviously, we want one European because this is the Race to Dubai podcast, but your other selection can come from anywhere around the world. So two players from you, Matt.
OK, my number one is a non-American, but he is eligible in the fantasy game, and that's Xander Schauffele. Twice finished tied sixth in the US Open, second in the Open last year, second in the Masters, second in the Players last year, winner of the Tour Championship, WGC, HSBC, and the Tournament of Champions this year. Great player in elite fields, which this one is this week. He hits the ball long enough. And I also quite liked the quotes that were coming out of him after Augusta. They were quite specific towards Augusta. He's telling his caddy, I can win here. I've got the game to win here at some point. But the very fact that he was coming away thinking of, I've got the game to win a major, I think running into this week, that's good news as well. And I'm going a little bit more left field with my European, and I'm going to go with Lucas Beauregard, which I'm assured is the correct pronunciation.
Well, we've got pronunciations wrong all podcasts, yes, so who
yes,
knows?
Yes, I think that's correct. I was speaking to a Danish journalist a couple of weeks ago who coached me. I like the fact that he can hit the ball a long way, and I think he's got quite a classy game. I think this might be the week when he steps up. He's given us a little hint when he beat Tiger Woods in the World Match Play, so this could be the first time he steps up in a major.
He's broken out a bit, hasn't he, over the last sort of 18 months, 12 months or so. Jamie, who do you like?
Thomas Peters, keep your eye on him. I think golf course...
You can't have three picks.
I'm not going to have him. Justin Harding's been playing good golf all year and we keep ignoring him. But my two picks are Brooks Koepka, should have won the Masters. I think he's so cool under pressure, nothing's going to bother him. Hits it mild. I just don't see any weaknesses in his game.
Is he putting well enough in it at the minute?
Don't know, I'll have to ask him. He's putted well for the last 2 years. He's not putted too badly because that wasn't,
he's another
the, best,
one, though,
wasn't
the
best part of his game. But I think he should have won the Masters, but great player. He's a some player. Still underrated, I think.
And gets up for the majors, doesn't he? That seems to be the thing for him.
And he played well in the Byron Nelson. So yeah. John Rahm's the other one, won recently the pairs.
Yeah. Does that count?
Don't know. I know he's playing. He's playing all right.
He got the cash for it.
Yeah, he got the money. Got the whatever it was.
Who was his partner? Ryan Palmer.
Yeah.
Did John Rahm make most of the scoring? I didn't watch all of it. I think he just
carried his clubs around.
Yeah.
Read a few putts. Again,
is he ready to break through?
Well, his majors record has been
New
great.
New crowds and that sort
that,
of thing.
Won't he? He'll love
what
that.
What if they get on his back a little bit?
He's American. They think he's American, don't they?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're my two, but. Yeah, it's a difficult one to select. What about you?
I am going to go off the back of my fantastic performance last week, I am going to go for, and I've had to dig deep for my first selection here, my European guy, because...
Oh, I wonder what it is.
I'm going to go for Rory McIlroy, which I have done for all of the majors, I think, for the past about year, because as we've discussed already, he seems to give himself so many chances, and surely it's just a matter of time. He has turned 30 just recently, as Matt was pointing out. I know that he's sort of reflected more on his life, I think, recently, hasn't he, over the last year, really, and some have suggested that might be a negative. I don't know. For me, it's got to be a positive. He seems more at one with himself, and if he just sinks a few more putts, surely, Jamie.
It's in the bag.
Surely. So Rory's my main selection. And having watched Scott Piercy play so well tee to green yesterday, and this is massive recency bias because it was just last night and it's the only thing that's in my memory. I can't really sort of take too much in these days, the older I get. But he has played well at Bethpage previously. He was second at the Byron Nelson. His strokes gained, Jamie.
You can get 230 to 1 on Scott
really,
Piercy.
Really, that'll do. Listen, his strokes gained tee to green final round. At Trinity Forest were sensational. And I know you're into the strokes gain stats, so that's...
How many events has Scott Piercy won?
That's a good question.
Is this a good question?
One, I think.
One, right, okay.
I think, or two.
He does appear on leaderboards.
Doesn't he? He was third at Heritage as well. I mean, whether it's his course of this week, I don't know, but he has got a little bit of form. Played well in Barclays a few years ago.
Would it be a worry that we reported early that he didn't make a bogey last week? Are the bogeys just waiting around the corner?
No, what a bit of regression to the mean, do you think? Yeah. And suddenly the bogeys will start to fall. No. My only issue, in fact, with Scott Piercy, and this is just one website I was looking at earlier this morning, is that there is a suggestion that afternoon early tee-off times might be better than the reverse, and Scott is first out on the 10th tee at 6:45 a.m. on Thursday. So there's a suggestion that the wind might get up Friday afternoon. But if we start trying to predict the weather...
The weathermen don't know what it is this afternoon.
Exactly,
they're only 4 days'
exactly.
time.
It's impossible to predict. So those are my two, McIlroy and a left-field one for Piercy. That is your lot for now. We will have a full review of the second major of the year, the USPGA Championship. Plus, we'll also look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Made in Denmark, presented by Fraser. That's all next week. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. But for now, from Matt Cooper, thanks for your company.
Goodbye, Dan.
And Jamie, always a pleasure.
Goodbye, everybody.
We will see you all next time. From me, it's goodbye.